Berube's got Broussard on the other side. Trying to get it in front. They score! Atkinson's got his second of the night.
Petrangelo spins it rink wide. Blues come back in again. Shin down the middle to Kyrou. They score! Tarasenko!
It's been however many days since playing in front of fans, right? So, first off, very excited to play with, you know, in front of people again. And but I think I'm most excited just to play with my teammates again.
TSN 1200.
Oh, Brady Tkachuk, we can supply the number for you. It's been 595 days for Brady Tkachuk between playing in front of fans in Ottawa. Slightly less than that if you include the three games he played in California pre-pandemic, and of course the three games he missed last week as we get set for the highly and much anticipated Brady Tkachuk debut tonight versus Erik Karlsson and the San Jose Sharks. It isn't a literal passing of the captain's torch, but a figurative one. And should this happen, let's say, a month from now, or maybe a few weeks from now, maybe they literally could do it. Although Erik Karlsson wanted none of that discussion yesterday when he was asked about it. The Sens are clearly in his rearview mirror, although he still considers Ottawa to be home. Anyway, interesting text to tonight's game, Sens and Sharks. 7 o'clock will be the game time. 5 o'clock, our pregame show will be live from the rink beginning at 10 a.m. this morning here on TSN 1200. Joining us lend more to the discussion from TSN, we welcome Mike Johnson, our hockey insider, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Mike?
Good morning, boys. I'm excited. This should be a fun night for Ottawa. It's kind of get the whole band together and Brady around, and we know what he brings, and hopefully some fans in the building, and you know, Erik Karlsson returning. There's lots of compelling storylines, and what should be a fun night with lots of people watching the game.
Yeah, and I'll add one more to that. Matt Murray making his season debut mm-hmm. with the Sens in net. Does that is that really when you think about all the things you just presented? Is that really the most important thing the Sens want to see tonight? With all due respect to Brady and him making his appearance, is Matt Murray ready to take the reins as the number one goalie here in Ottawa?
Yeah. I mean, you want to be like what's going to determine whether Ottawa is successful in this game and in this year? It's got more to do with what happens in net than what happens with Brady Tkachuk back and then him playing his first game with the first line and everything else. None of that matters as much as Matt Murray, because Ottawa shown this year, and even a little bit last year, when they get good goaltending, somewhere between average to good, they're a pretty competitive team. And when the season ended last year, the first 10 games, they couldn't get a win. A lot of that was based on the goaltending. They just weren't very good, Matt Murray or otherwise. And so, yeah, so far, Forsberg, Gustafsson have both been more than just good, been like spectacular. Given Ottawa the kind of goaltending that will keep you in every single game. Can Matt Murray deliver games like that 7 out of 10 times, 8 out of 10 times? If he can, it should be an interesting year for Ottawa. If he can't, then it's a different decision altogether. You know, how much does he play? They've made the commitment to him. They believe in him, clearly, but they have capable guys around if he's not doing it. So they don't want to go down that road, so you're right. As much fun we're going to have with Brady Tkachuk coming back, Matt Murray's performance is probably more noteworthy for the Sens.
Obviously, tremendously sick missing that time, Johnny. Would you give him basically Thursday, Saturday, Monday, and kind of reconvene Tuesday to get a feel for where his game is at? And more importantly, just get let him get back in the groove?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how physically, whatever you could tell me, how physically taxing it is to play goalie. Like, if your performance is going to be affected...
I sense sarcasm in your voice.
Well, I mean, like, you are just standing there. You're not skating. It's a mental requirement than a physical one as much as anything.
Yeah.
So, if he's not healthy enough, or, you know, he's still kind of weakened state because of the illness, then I don't play him. Like, I have other guys there. Like, I just... Until you're like... There are no excuses why you would not play well. Yeah. Then I would like, we'll just play the other guys because the other guys are really good and playing really well right now. So maybe I'll be generous and say, okay, you can have tonight to work yourself back in. But after that, I'm sorry, then you're just back in the flow. I expect you to be as good as you're going to be.
I'm not around the team, Johnny, but I read the quotes, and just I'm a big believer in body energy. Do you get worried at all when you hear a guy kind of day-to-day talking about, you know, I'll see how I feel versus, again, I guess I go kind of Ole Coles. Like, I want a guy that just wants to grab a hold of the net, or am I reading too much into it?
I think you want to feel that sentiment. Like, you know, I'm not like, if you're having a private conversation, like, I'm not feeling great, but I'll play me. I can do it. You want a guy to err on the side of, you know, I'll go in regardless because I believe I can do it. I want to be part of the team. I'm ready to go. But I also think we've changed a little bit in that players are, and for the better, more comfortable in saying, you know, I'm not feeling good. I'm not talking about just mentally. I'm talking about like physically. Like, I'm not feeling good enough to play at my best. And in many ways, that's a tougher decision. That's a tougher thing to say than yeah, for me, a coach, I can get it done. To say, you know what, I'm probably going to be a detriment to the team. You'd be better served by not playing me. So I know what you're saying, but I think the shifted a little bit where players now, if you're not right, they're more comfortable in saying, you know what, I'm probably not quite going to be my best.
Matt Murray's best hockey was in Pittsburgh when he won Stanley Cups, and Marc-Andre Fleury was there too, a challenger, and then Fleury was gone, and in his last year in Pittsburgh, he wasn't very good. Talking about Matt Murray, his year last year wasn't very good, and there wasn't really an obvious challenger given, again, small sample size, but Forsberg putting up a couple of good performances. Gustafson, end of last year, was good, puts up a good performance. Does that maybe, in a roundabout way, provide that kind of inspiration that maybe Matt Murray, that challenge that he needs to up his game?
It should. It's like that's something that drives him. Some goaltenders, like Marty Brodeur, wanted no part of a backup that would push him. Like, he wanted a backup that would just support him and just kind of be there to do whatever Marty needed. Other goaltenders really like the idea of competition. And I think that's, you know, if Matt Murray's a guy that likes competition, I think given the way he played last year and given the way that Forsberg started so far this year, he's got it. Like, I don't know how long they would go without him playing well before they just say, okay, well, you're not playing as much. So maybe that's it. If that's what he needs, then good, because he's got it right now, and hopefully that brings out the best in him.
What do you expect from Brady Tkachuk tonight?
I expect a rambunctious 17 minutes. You know what I mean? Like just what he does. It'd be harder to evaluate if he was a super skilled player who had to make fine plays with the puck, because maybe the timing might not be quite there, or maybe the legs might not be quite there, but he's a guy who runs into people, and he crashes and bangs, and I think the will to do that is going to be there in no short supply. So, you know, he'll be physical, he'll get to the front of the net, he'll probably bang away some rebounds, he'll scrum it up, he might get no fight, like, you know, all those things that just drag everyone else in the game to show how engaged and how much he cared. We'll see that. And, you know, maybe the chemistry's there with the puck, maybe not, but I don't think that's going to define his night tonight. It's just going to be just a level of physical and emotional engagement for him.
What part of his game will be impacted the most by him not seeing any of training camp?
The last... I used to joke, remember Douglas Murray played in San Jose, big Swedish defenseman, like super heavy player. I used to joke that he was like the NBA. He had a 24-second shot clock. Like, after 24 seconds, he was in trouble. Like, the legs got straight, the lungs started burning, and he could no longer make plays. So you're asking what I'm worried about? I'm worried about if Brady has a 24-second shot clock tonight. Okay. Late in the shift, if he's got to back check someone after 20 seconds in the offensive zone, I don't know if he'll have the juice in his legs to do that. So that's where I would look to, just late in shifts. Maybe late in the game if he gets up to 17, 18 minutes, but I think more just late in shifts. Does he get tired a little bit faster than his line mates? I would suspect he will, and that might be an issue.
So I want to wrap my head around something, and you played a long time in the National Hockey League. We have seen before, it's not right across the board, it's seen before players that have missed training camp or even into a season, and they never get their game back for the entire season. And I sit here and I look at it and go, well, at some point you should be, you know, physically kind of up to speed with everybody else. So why does that, and I'm not suggesting it's going to happen with Tkachuk, but why does that happen with some players where they miss a training camp and they just never find their game for the entire year?
I think it's got to do with more mental, obviously, than physical, because you're right, after a week or two, you're the same as everybody else physically. I think the concern becomes if you start a little bit slowly because you're forced back in the lineup and you're not quite ready, then you don't get the results you think you want and think you have to produce because of this new contract that you just negotiated. So it's tied in like a slow start, which everyone's going to go through at times during the year, But when you couple that with a new contract, and a lot of players feel the burden, especially in that first year of a new contract, to somehow do way more and produce way more. And so, you know, a slow start snowballs into something that's harder to get out of. Now, I don't worry about that with Brady, because I think Brady has other parts of his game that help drive him to be successful beyond goals and points. Of course he wants those, and he's expected to get them, but, you know, he's not expected to get 90 points. Like, I think if he were to get 30 goals and 30 assists, like, that would be tremendous for Brady Tkachuk. It's a different kind of pressure, and because he's so physical, he can bring that every game and kind of live up to the contract that way. But I think, you know, you factor a slow start because you're not quite ready with pressure from a new contract, and then some guys just can't quite get out of their own way for the bulk of the year.
In a small way, does it help that this had a positive ending to it? It wasn't like negative, everyone hated ownership or the player you're mad at. It's more like, hey, we don't like the timing, but in a lot of ways, it just ended up being a big love affair by the time he signed.
Yes, and Simmer, they started well. Like, had he missed 10 games and they lost 7-10, then everyone would have been negative on Brady, on the team, on the player. But because they've started well, he didn't miss that much time. He got to do Frank the Tank coming out of Saturday night, and everyone got excited for him. Like, I think you're right. It didn't turn nasty. And it probably was 3 weeks away from getting a little nastier, even for someone as beloved as Brady Tkachuk. But it never got there. And so there are no hard feelings, certainly between Brady and the organization, but also between the fans, organization, or player. And that maybe makes it easier to kind of jump back in the lineup and be as good as he can be.
Stutzla, Norris, Batherson, Shabbat on the back end, mix in Brady. What kind of potential do you think that power play has?
I like it. And you know, like when Brady plays around the front of the net, it's nice that they have kind of the linear pillars, right? They have Thomas Shabbat, who's an obvious guy who's very good at the blue line. And they got Brady down in front of the net, an obvious guy who's really good in front of the net. And then now you've added Norris, Stutzla, Batherson, three guys who play across the middle, who all have pretty good skill, and they're getting a bit of a feel for each other. So, I mean, you know what it's like when power play groups have a chance to play a couple of years with some of the same personnel, and the spacing becomes instinctive, and the puck movement with all the variety of options becomes, you know, second nature. It has a chance to get better. And the fact that both Norris and Batherson like to shoot and can score makes them more dangerous. The last step to me is Timmy Stutzla showing a willingness, we talked about it last week, showing a willingness to shoot, score a bit more and not always try to pass the puck. Once he does that, all the options will be open and they should be pretty good.
San Jose comes into town. They're 2-0. Expectations probably as low as they've ever been in San Jose for this team. So this is an unexpectedly, I guess, good start. What do you make of the Sharks as they begin this new season?
They're in like professional sports purgatory because they're not so bad that they'll probably be the worst, but they're not nearly good enough that they'd be even remotely considered a cup contender. And they're not ascending and getting better like Ottawa, who might not be a cup contender, but they're getting better. And you see the foundation that could get there. All you see in Ottawa and San Jose is a foundation of players that are likely to continue to get worse, not better. So they're in a tough spot. They have a whole bunch of contracts they cannot move if they want to try to rebuild or whatever it is. And so they're kind of stuck. And they're going to play hard. They have good players. And so, you know, they'll battle, but I don't think they're quite good enough. Their goaltending's a real concern. James Reimer, Aiden Hill, probably not good enough to get it done long term. But maybe they've also rallied around Evander Kane. Like, I think not having Kane around and kind of putting that distraction aside, you have to be impressed. Like, going into Montreal the day Kane gets suspended and dealing with that and playing really well, that's pretty impressive, because it would have been easier to get sidetracked by that. So they have a veteran group. They'll give you good games, but if you play with pace against them, I think you can break down their defense. And that's going to be where they're in trouble, because they don't have the goaltending to make up for it.
At this point, anything for Erik Karlsson coming home? Or is it, hey, that ship has sailed, just another hockey match?
It's not just another game. You know, he'd have it circled on the calendar. You know, you talked about how he still calls Ottawa his home. He's got his extended family from there. So it's not just another game. He'll be amped up to play it, but it won't be as personal as it would have felt in years past. So somewhere in between, he'll be fired up, but it's not going to be you know, we got to do it for Eric, and we got to, you know, he's going to think he's got to win the game single-handedly. He's past that point.
Oh, speaking of passionate returns, how about Jesperi Kotkaniemi returning to Montreal? Is there anything, I mean, Montreal's got to draw inspiration from any, is there any inspiration from that whole storyline from the summer and the offer sheets and the trades, et cetera, something to get the Montreal going after an 0-4 start?
So I don't think the players like begrudge Jesperi Kotkaniemi. I don't think that, you know, if someone's going to pay you twice what you deserve, like no player's going to say, no, I love this organization that's scratching the finals so much, I'm going to forego the extra $3-4 million. Like no one's going to do that. So no one's going to get mad at them for that. But what I think the Canadians should be appreciative of is that coming to town on a day when there is so much noise around the Canadians, that it's a bit of a distraction for the media that they won't be talking about how bad Montreal started this year, and they can kind of talk about the offer sheet and the whole summer of games with Carolina. So maybe in that sense, they're doing them a favor because it's about Jesperi tonight and not about the 0-4 Canadians, because they have a lot of problems. I watched their games. I've called their games. We can talk about Price, Shea Weber, Joel Edmondson, Paul Byron, Mike Hoffman was out for a while. They had a lot of injuries. They don't have defensemen they trust. They just do not have defensemen that they feel good about. They don't play cohesively, so they got some issues right now beyond just Jesperi Kotkaniemi coming down.
And for Mark Bergevin, Johnny, how much are you just worried about being embarrassed? I mean, your fear is another no-show, and Kotkaniemi has a big game.
Yeah, that would be. The fear of the organization. I mean, you're mostly worried about just a fifth game of not winning. But you couple that with not winning against a team that's doing well in Carolina, against a player you elected not to match, and how there's a bit of whatever rivalry, whatever gamesmanship between the two organizations. That would be insult to injury. And what's already a pretty perilous situation.
I know. I don't know if you've done a deep dive. I know you really like hockey analytics, et cetera. Have you done anything on Montreal that can explain to you the numbers as to why they're struggling out of the gate?
Yeah, I've done a few. So they're like most teams. They're much better off the rush than off the cycle. Their players generate their chances that way, and they haven't turned the puck over enough. Like playing defense, and their defensemen don't break up the play quick enough and give good service to the players up front that allow them to take rush chances. So everything's off the cycle, and that's not a recipe for Montreal to be successful. And their defensive game is a little bit porous. They give up a lot in front of their net all of a sudden. They were always really high up there and kind of expected goals against, because they wouldn't give you the slot. And they've given up the slot an awful lot so far this season. So they go hand in hand, but those are the two main issues that Montreal has to correct to get better.
Philadelphia takes down Boston last night 6-3. Swayman really struggled. Do you foresee in the new year that it's almost an automatic they'd bring Rask back and look and say, hey, when healthy, still one of the best goalies in the National Hockey League?
If he's healthy, yeah, I think they would. Now, having said that, I'm bullish on Swayman. I think he's a good goalie. I know he played bad last night, but I like him. Maybe I trust their, you know, I trust the Omar coming in from Buffalo. So I think he's got the potential to be really good. But if Tuukka Rask is available in January or February after playing the Olympics, and you can sign him to a one-year, $2 million deal, I don't see how you don't. Neither of those guys warrant the kind of respect that says we can't bring Tuukka Rask in because of you. So, yeah, they'll look at him for sure. As Tuukka has made it very clear, if he's coming back, he wants to come back to Boston.
Yeah, well, he said he'd come back for what about $750 league minimum? He said he'd only play for Boston.
Well, listen, even better if you're the Bruins.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe $750 with some bonuses if you can afford
there
it.
There you go. All good. All right, Mike, appreciate the time as always. You're doing the studio tonight for the Sens game?
I am in studio tonight for the Sens, and then I'm on my way to Ottawa tomorrow for game Saturday.
All right, sounds good. Appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you tonight, and thanks for the time as always this morning.
All right, enjoy the game, guys.
Welcome back, 8:42 on this Thursday morning. A Sens game day. Sens and Sharks coming at you. We'll be live from the rink beginning at 10 this morning. Take you right through to the pregame show at 5 o'clock. Jamie Baker will make his pre- and postgame debut for us starting tonight against his old team that he did for a million years. And Jamie's going to join us on the show coming up in about 10 minutes. Got his thoughts on the Sharks, which, again, a team he knows intimately, and some early thoughts on the Sens since he's moved back to Ottawa. So look forward to talking to the man they call Bakes.
I also want to hear about the old drive, Do you know the way to San Jose? Well, do you know the way from San Jose to Ottawa?
Yeah.
It's a hell of a hike.
Actually, do you know the way from Ottawa to San Jose and then back again, which I think is what Jamie did. So we introduced Jamie, about a month or so ago? He came on and said, going to be part of the team here, looking forward to it, etc. But I'm not available for a period of time because I got to go back and get the rest of my stuff in San Jose. So I think he drove all the way out there and then drove all the way back, but I'm not positive on that because I don't know how the border stuff worked. Maybe he flew and maybe I'm making it all up. I'm not quite sure. Anyway, we'll talk to him coming up in about 10 minutes. And then after 9 o'clock this morning, and we're looking forward to a conversation with Beb Priestman. She is the coach of Canada's gold medal winning women's soccer team, who, of course, are playing here in Ottawa against New Zealand in what they're calling a celebration tour Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Last time I heard, there are still some tickets left for that game. It's going to be a terrific atmosphere. This is their first game since the Olympics. It'll be happening right here in Ottawa. So we're looking forward to talking, reliving some great memories, yeah. I'm sure, with Beb Priestman, the Olympic soccer coach, when she joins us just after 9 this morning.
Is Christine Sinclair still playing here?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So, no, I kind of thought that the Olympics might kind of be the end of her career and kind of a swan song.
Well,
or is she just going to keep going?
Yeah, that's one of the questions I wanted to ask the coach, because that is a really interesting thing to stick handle. Christine Sinclair, certainly the greatest soccer player we've ever produced in this country, arguably maybe, in the grouping of the top five female soccer players of all time. How do you stick handle that as a coach? As a player is moving into the latter part of their career, you want to honor, and you're somewhat new, right? She was with the national program as an assistant coach, left, came back as the head coach. How do you stick handle a legacy player as they come toward the end of their career?
Yeah, you hand it honestly. You sit down with them. But it generally, for an athlete, as you hit the pinnacle team-wise and you end up winning a gold medal, I think some of the transitions, JR, between that and the next Olympics should be a little bit easier. But, hey, it also depends where the athlete sees themselves and kind of what they see post-career. You know, do you want to be part of Soccer Canada, or what does the future hold? And she still plays professional soccer in the United States, right?
Yes, she plays in the NWSL with the Portland Thorns, I believe it is. All right, so Beb Priestman coming up just after 9 o'clock, 8:45. Week 7 of the NFL kicks off tonight. It's the Browns and the Broncos. Remember to get your picks in for our football pick'em pool presented by our friends at Baton Rouge Steakhouse and Bar. They got $100 up for grabs for our weekly winner. So get your picks in our website at tsn1200.ca. There is a pretty juicy, and it's not a new rumor, but sounding like things are, perhaps there's some movement as far as a trade of Deshaun Watson goes. John McClain covers the Houston Texans for the Houston Chronicle. Very plugged in NFL guy. He wrote last night that the train is moving in that direction and potentially a deal could be done by the end of this week. The NFL trade deadline is November 2nd. There have been a lot of rumors around that the Dolphins were a front runner for Watson all along. Things went very cool when all of his legal issues came up. And that remains in a state of flux right now, that whole part of Deshaun Watson. But he is not suspended by the NFL. He's just being healthy scratched by the Houston Texans. But it sounds like we know there's a divorce coming. They are going to trade him. It's just a matter of when, and are they going to be able to get the return?
Yeah.
Sounds like they and the Dolphins are getting closer potentially to a deal.
Would it be right to say, JR, first of all, if they make the trade, thoughts are he'll play the rest of the season before they rule on anything anyway, right? So Dolphins are basically looking, let's salvage the season?
I guess.
That's kind of the way.
NFL hasn't suspended him by now for, under the personal conduct policy. Yeah. If they haven't suspended him by now, I'm assuming they're not going to suspend him. These are all, at this point, civil suits, right? Yeah. There is a criminal investigation underway, but it's just an investigation at this stage. And as I said, there are civil suits.
Yeah.
But that's the extent of it right now. And so I'm assuming if a trade happens, the Dolphins, they want to acquire him, they want to play him, and they want to salvage their season. They've already given up their first-round pick next year. Yeah. The apparent asking price from the Texans, and we'll see if they would get that for Deshaun Watson, is 3 first-round picks. Okay. They've already traded their – so, if that's what the Dolphins are willing to give up, they've already given up their first next year.
So that would be their next four first-round picks, potentially, to bring in Deshaun Watson.
Is Tua part of the trade year?
It would have to be.
Oh, yeah.
That would have to be what Houston would want back.
Yeah, and you'd ask, would that can be considered to be one of the picks? And, hey, I was surprised. Deshaun Watson's only 26 years old. And it is interesting, JR, because of the feel or vibe of South Florida and Miami. I do think it's one of the few markets you could probably make this trade and not get a whole lot of kickback, where I think it would be really tough for other markets. And for the National Football League, I agree. Also, we've seen in the past where they let things play out, then they kind of sit down and make their own decision on how it looked or how it was handled, and then maybe suspend later. But as I said, right now there's been nothing done, and like I said, so lots of reasons this makes a whole lot of sense, and he'll be on the move.
Why do you say that Miami is different than other markets in terms of accepting a Deshaun Watson?
Just a very liberal vibe down there, very transient vibe. They wouldn't get the pushback of, say, a Green Bay that's owned by the community. I don't want to say that morals are a little down. It's just different, JR, when you go there. The mentality we've seen during COVID, the way it's governed, the way it's lived, it just won't be as big a deal as it would be in other markets, where I think it would be a lot of trouble for a team to bring a guy like this in right now.
Yeah, if it happens, I'd be very interested to see what the reaction would be in whatever market he ends up going to. It's pretty limited. I think there are some franchises that are just like, they've just said no. Even if we thought he would be an improvement on what we have right now, we just don't want to add that.
Well, and here, in similar to what happened with Columbus, with the fellow that had been drafted by them, or from Columbus, sorry, by Arizona, what would happen in a lot of markets, JR, is that once the trade happens, then your local media would start to do a deep dive into what's going on, right? It would open up, hey, you know, we've kind of been following this, but not exactly. And like I said, it is, you know, I'm not saying it won't get a bit of a kickback, but it's just not the same in South Florida. So, like I said, more people there will just be worried about, hey, can the Dolphins win a few more football games? And they'll be worried about the off-field stuff.
All right. And again, NFL trade deadline is November 2nd. So that's not next week, but the week after. So we're getting down to the short strokes, and we'll see if we're starting to see more trades now in the NFL, in-season trades. Typically, that you hardly saw any. But the last couple of years, there have been more. I think teams have clearly defined of, hey, we're not there this year. Let's trade some of our guys that aren't going to be part of our team next year.
Good for business too.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything that gets you talking. The NFL specializes in getting people to talk about their game, whether it's actual games or whether it's the offseason. No doubt about it. All right, we'll take a break, 8:49. When we come back, Jamie Baker will join us, part of the pre- and post-game show here on TSN 1200, and will make his debut with us. We'll talk some Sharks hockey with Jamie. They're in town to play the Sens tonight, right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200. Care of the Habs, 5-0 on Tuesday. Of course, Ottawa hasn't played since beating Dallas on Sunday by a score of 3-2. Matt Murray will make his debut, but a lot less talk about that and a lot more talk about Brady Tkachuk also making his debut for the Sens tonight. So a couple of reasons to be extra excited to see what the Sens have in store for tonight. Now, as far as the San Jose side of things, a man who had some pretty intimate knowledge because he played for and then broadcasted that team's games for a lot of seasons. He's going to be part of our pre- and post-game shows here on TSN 1200 for the coming season, and he'll make his debut tonight. We welcome on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline former NHLer Jamie Baker. How are you doing this morning, Jamie?
Good morning, guys. Just doing what I do now. I listen to you guys in the morning, and I listen to 1200 throughout the day. I'm a talk show radio follower now.
just like in San Jose, nonstop hockey talk.
Well, that was the thing, you know. Like, I never listened when I played because I was probably the guy getting carved by the analysts. So I definitely didn't want to listen to talk radio when I was a player. And then out in San Jose, I spent 16 years there with the Sharks. The only talk radio was up in San Francisco, and they talked, you know, 49ers, San Francisco Giants, and the Golden State Warriors, maybe a little bit of Raiders and A's. Very seldom did they ever touch on hockey, so I never really listened to it. Yeah. But I do now. I'm officially a fan.
There you go, and we appreciate that. Now, when we introduced you about a month or so ago, you're like, "Yep, I'm in, but I'm going to need some time because I got to go back to San Jose." So, am I right in saying that you drove out to San Jose and drove all your stuff back? And how was that cross country extravaganza?
You are incorrect.
Okay.
The initial plan was to fly out there, go through my storage unit, which means three piles: throw away, give away, keep. And then I was going to drive back, and then I changed my plans. I flew back, so I've shipped. The update is everything got shipped about 2 days ago.
Okay. So, and has it arrived in one piece? Any important things?
Well, it's en route. It's en route. So we're hoping that it arrives on time. Yeah.
Okay. So, good stuff.
All good. All good, though. But thank you for your concern.
Well, I just want to make sure you're comfortable as you begin your work here at TSN 1200. So we want to bring you on, to make sure everybody knew that you're going to be part of things starting tonight with the pregame show. But, B, you know the Sharks as well, or better than anybody, certainly, in Ottawa. What do you make of their – again, it's early season, only two games. But what do you make of what San Jose has done so far?
So watched half the game against Winnipeg just because of the time change. And then I watched the entire game against Montreal. Now, against Montreal, the Sharks looked great, but part of it is, did they play really that well, or did Montreal play that bad, or was it a combination of both? And I think it was probably a combination of both, but San Jose has a different vibe around them right now. They've injected some youth in there, but also I think some of the veterans have come back more motivated than maybe in the past. They aren't really happy about the season that they had last year. They've had 2 years in a row now where they've missed the playoffs. This is an organization, San Jose, this is their 31st year in the league, 30 years playing because of the 1 year of a lockout. But they've never missed the playoffs 3 years in a row. So it's a motivated group. And I'm seeing a team, if you get the defense going, the big three of Burns, Carlson, and Vlasic going, and playing well, each of them on different D pairs, they're already good down the middle with Logan Couture, Hurdle, and Bonino as your 1-2-3. And if you get any type of goaltending, which they have so far, then you've got a team that could be a little bit of a sleeper in the West. I think they might be fighting for a playoff spot this year, which I think most of the experts out there, I don't want to say wrote the Sharks off, but were like, didn't know what to expect, but I don't think they were picked in a lot of experts' opinions to make the playoffs this year. But boy, if you're good, if you have a decor like that and you're good down the middle, that's a little bit of a game changer. And then you're bringing in some of these young guys with some of their speed and whatnot. They're a fun team to watch so far, and I think it's going to be a fast, very aggressive game tonight. Looking forward to it.
First time in a long time, Bakes, where there's actually no pressure on the team as well.
I think there's, Simmer, I think there's always internal pressure, I think, for players to live up to their contracts. Like, look at Erik Karlsson this year. His AAV is $11 million, but, for actually cash dollars, what you're getting paid this year, he's the highest paid player in the league. This year he gets $14.5 million in his contract. He's the highest paid, $1.5 million more than McDavid. So I think there's pressure for him to live up to that and to the standards that he's previously set here in his great years in Ottawa. I know Burns puts pressure on him. Logan Couture puts pressure on themselves. And I think young guys, there's a little bit of pressure trying to make the NHL. So I see that. But I think they also are trying to defy what the experts say. So it's us against them, a little bit of that type of mentality a little bit within there. I could see that. And they're also, I think they're trying to reestablish a culture. This is also the first year in, 22 years that either Joe Thornton or Patrick Marleau weren't a representative in that dressing room. So it's kind of really Logan Couture's room now as the captain. Those guys were major influences. So one of those two guys, and for a long time, of course, both of them have been in that locker room. So there's a little bit of a changing of the guard right now. And they've got some young guys. This Jonathan Dolan had a good game the other night. William Eklund, they didn't have him penciled in initially during training camp to make this team. They were probably going to send him back to Sweden for the year or down to the San Jose Barracuda, the American Hockey League team. And he made the team because so far anyway, we'll see what happens come games 9 or 10, whether they want to use him for the entire year or not. But He's been playing really well, so they've got some young guys that they're excited about, which has in years past they were excited about guys, but they just didn't live up to their expectations.
Jamie Bake is our guest. The other big change is no Evander Kane, who right now is suspended by the NHL, and we'll see what happens when that ends at the end of November. I know last year was different physically, even as a broadcaster, you're not able to get to nearly as close to the players as you typically would. Can you give us, though, a sense in the years previous to that and even last year? I mean, the sense from the outside, from those of us from the outside, is that his teammates didn't like the guy too much. Can you give us any insight into that at all?
So I can't give you insight last year because I wasn't with the team. So I left in, you know, prior to last season. Okay. I left in December of 2020. So I don't know what it was like. I know what 2 years ago, I didn't see, you know, like I'd heard some things about, you know, Winnipeg and Buffalo, you know, and but I hadn't seen anything personally. He was really good with the media. He was good with me, and I didn't see it. So if there was anything brewing behind the scenes, I don't think the lid had popped off yet. I think that kind of all happened last year. You know, the guys are obviously being very careful about what they're saying, but there's a pretty much underlying belief out there that they're happy right now without him in the locker room. And there's, you know, they're creating this culture and this positive vibe, and they're moving on. You know, I think they're probably tired of answering the questions, especially, you know, you get the swing through Canada, everybody's asking them about it, and, you know, they're answering the questions as politely as they can, but at the same time, they want to focus, you know, as Bob Bugner says, I'm focused on the 23 guys that are here. So I wish I could give you more information on it. I don't know how divisive he was, you know, last year in the locker room, you know, but from what I read, from what I, you know, gather, that's when it kind of started to get worse. And you just see all the off ice issues. So probably some of the guys knew about that a little bit, last year, because that's when it was kind of all happening, especially the gambling thing and what that all came out and stuff like that.
Will he ever play for the Sharks again? Will he play in the NHL again? Or do you think the next stop is the KHL?
I have no clue what's going to happen here. I boil it down to six options. One is he plays for the Sharks, which I don't know. I don't see that happening. Two, they send him to the American League. I don't know if they want to do that. Three, he plays somewhere else, whether it be the East Coast League, the KHL, somewhere. If they plays in the KHL, that means he gets out of the Sharks contract, which the Sharks would probably like if he wasn't there. Four, he just goes home and just play, you know, he watches this season. And actually, I got five options. The fifth option is something else. He does something else that allows them to get out of the contract. So if they just sit around and wait long enough, that could be next.
Wow.
Because we don't know what's out there, right? Seriously, like, I don't know what's going to happen with Evander Kane. I don't think anybody really does. And I know the Sharks haven't really said anything about it either.
Hang on, what's the sixth option?
I only had five, sorry. Okay. I was teasing you with six.
Okay,
you got six options. We'll review those five carefully again.
Yes, okay, you've got all day, and maybe you can come up with a sixth option you can present during the pregame show tonight. How's that sound?
I will take the time to do that.
All right, sounds good. Perfect. Looking forward to hearing you tonight in the pre- and post-game show with the boys. Enjoy the game tonight. Appreciate the time this morning.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there's Jamie Baker, our new pre- and post-game show co-host here on TSN 1200. Looking forward to his insights all season long.
Yeah, funny for Bakes, he played with Ulfie Dahl in a couple of years. And of course, that's his son, so it's kind of circle of life here. I get the feeling with the San Jose crew get off to just an okay start and then absolute crash and burn. Hey, you know, you get those, you know, no pressure. Oh, it's great. I know down the middle they are good, but what are the big three in that goaltending? I know the division is weak. I just don't see it holding up.
All right, we'll find out tonight, 7 o'clock, Sens and Sharks here on TSN 1200. We'll take a break, get you the latest news and sports, including details on the baseball playoff games last night. Two blowouts, Braves and Astros, now both within a game of the World Series. A win, that would be. When we come back, we're going to talk some soccer. The Canadian gold medal-winning Olympic women's soccer team is here in town. They're going to play a game on Saturday. Bev Priestman, their coach, will join us. We'll relive those Olympic memories and look forward to what the future holds for our national women's soccer team with Bev Priestman coming up next right here on TSN 1200.